Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, as promised last week, what is this week going to focus on? That's right.
You made a promise.
I did. I said, this week we are going to focus on emotions.
I wondered why you were so emotional about this during the week.
That's right.
You made a promise.
I did. And you said, oh, now I got work to do.
Oh, yeah.
And so here we are.
Your promises obligate me.
Well, I try.
Okay.
So we're going to start out this week about emotions, talking about the six major theories of emotion. And we're going to pull some of this stuff from an article in the website verywell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written by Kendra Cherry. And what we're going to kind of walk through some of these different theories, because they kind of group into a couple of different general classes.
This was interesting title, because when you and I were trained, mm-hmm. we essentially discussed two theories of emotion.
Right.
You know, we always thought in terms of these two classic theories of emotion. And we stumble into this article that says the six theories of emotions.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, let's take a look at this.
Let's add a few more.
Let's add a few more.
It's sort of like parenting styles. There was always three parenting styles. And now there's
five.
Now there's 1,000.
Right.
You know, it just keeps adding every day. Around.
So as far as emotions, theories of emotions fall into three categories.
Right. Yes.
They are.
Let's first talk about what an emotion is.
Okay.
An emotion is, there are...
Easy to talk about, isn't it?
It is.
See, that's the first problem.
Well, I think that something that I always like to mention when we first start out talking about emotion is that, you know, whenever a culture values something, it gives... You can always tell how much a culture values something by how many words it has to describe it.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Here in Florida, for example, we have one or two words that we typically use for snow.
Oh.
Snow.
Now I know where
flurries,
you're going.
You know, that type of thing. Inuit, however, have dozens.
50-some.
Something like that,
right.
Words for snow, because snow plays a very important part of their life. Emotions are things that are very important to humans.
Right.
And so we have lots and lots and lots of words that we use to describe emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to wrap up this week with a review of the movie Inside Out.
Right.
And in that movie, it talks about basically just a handful of emotions.
Right.
But when we think about, you know, life mm-hmm. in general, there are. I think thousands of words, at least hundreds of words that are used to describe the way we feel and the emotions that we experience.
That's right. And there's also a cultural component.
Right.
You know, different cultures have different words for different emotions.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when we're trying to define what an emotion is, it is a very generic mm-hmm. definition. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a complex set of feelings that are related to things that are going on in our environment, outside environment and internal environment, and we sort of interpret the world in association with these feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the recurring themes we're going to see through the week is that emotions are complex, but it's a complex combination of physiological. Mm-hmm. Responses or reactions and psychological changes, psychological
it's psychological perception.
I don't want to say feelings, because that's become circular.
I think it's psychological interpretations those physiological feelings in association with what's going on around us.
So we want to start with when we talk about emotions, there's a physiologic reaction. We feel physically different. And we begin to think there's a psychological interpretation of what this feeling is,
right,
and where it came from.
Right.
Okay. So we're going to be talking about those two things, our bodily response and our mental response,
right,
throughout the week. And
right,
we're going to add to that discussion as we go along. It'll make sense at the end of the week.
Right.
And
right,
we'll try to parse this out.
Right. Absolutely. So, and it's, as you can tell already in the first couple of minutes of this podcast, These aren't really easy things to talk about.
Right.
We think about them as though they're very simple and basic and innate in life.
Right.
But they really are pretty complex.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm,
you know, one of the things that we, you know, unfortunately just won't have time to even get to in the 4 days that we're going to spend, 5 days that we're going to spend talking about this, is, you know, when you think about conditions and disorders associated with,
yeah,
emotions,
right,
where people can't feel emotions,
mm-hmm,
you know, to some extent, we think about like autism spectrum disorders, where the range of emotions are somewhat restricted, or at least the interpretation of emotions,
that's right,
is somewhat restricted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's lots of difficulties when we think about emotions in a intellectual or conversational way. Many times we say, "Oh, I feel happy." But my feeling of happy may be very different than your feeling of happy, and the things that elicit that feeling from me may be very different than the things that elicit that feeling from you. And so it is much more complex than we,
right,
than we give it credit.
Right. And remember, we could teach an entire course, a 15 or 16 week course on this. We're doing it in just a couple of days.
Right.
So bear with us, but I think we are going to sort this out.
Yeah, I hope so. So let's start out talking about some of these theories. And the first area that we're going to talk about is the evolutionary theory.
That's right.
Of evolution. The evolutionary theory of evolution.
And the name of emotion. The name
most
frequently associated with evolution is?
Charles Darwin.
And as it turns out, he was the first one,
right,
to really address this topic,
right,
in an academic way. You remember he took this trip on the Beagle around,
right,
the world, and he found out that emotions are expressed the same throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
And people who've never been in contact with each other. And he wrote a book.
Origin of Species.
No. He did, yes.
He wrote that one.
No, he didn't write that. He wrote another book called The Universal Expression of Emotions in Animals. The Expression of Emotions in Animals and Man. And in that second book, he talked about everywhere he went, happiness was expressed by smiling.
Right.
It wasn't something we learned.
Right.
It seemed to be innate.
Right.
And he was the one who first talked about this.
Right. And that is sort of one of the foundations of the evolutionary theory of emotion. And that is that smiling sort of means the same thing in every,
right,
culture.
Right.
And being angry looks,
mm-hmm,
the same in,
right,
most cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this consistency across cultures, despite the fact that there's no contact, despite,
that's
the,
right,
fact that you grow up in very different regions, very,
mm-hmm,
different cultures, that some of these aspects of emotion are very similar.
Right. And what Darwin did is he said, well, first of all, these we retain, they're universal, and we retain them.
Mm-hmm.
And Darwin argued that anything that's retained,
right,
serves a purpose.
Right.
Okay, and that's, I think, the first and most important premise of emotions,
right,
is they serve a purpose.
Right.
And for Darwin, of course, the purpose would be survival.
Right.
Is that we use emotions. Emotions motivate us.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing he said. And the other thing is that they keep us safe and alive.
Right.
We react emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Fight or flight, for example,
right,
is one of those emotions, and one of the behaviors that's triggered by emotions.
Right.
Here we go with the complexity again. But he was the one who said these are innate,
mm-hmm,
and they serve an adaptive function.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other piece of the evolutionary sort of theory of emotion is the fact that, you know, I guess technically speaking,
mm-hmm,
Darwin didn't talk about evolution as much as he talked about natural selection.
Right.
All,
mm-hmm,
right. And so what he talked about as it relates to emotions as well is the fact that those species, those people, those creatures that were able to associate an appropriate emotional response to things mm-hmm. were more likely to survive. Right. And so if you are more likely to associate fear with something that could prematurely kill you, mm-hmm. you are more likely to survive. And then whatever that biological propensity is to experience that emotion would be passed on to your offspring.
That's right. And one of the most important is to be able to interpret emotions of others.
Right.
You have to know that somebody is posing a threat to you.
Right.
Okay. Because if you don't,
right,
you're not going to survive the day.
Right.
So those people who have that ability mm-hmm. to perceive a threatening posture, a threatening emotion in others, survived. Those who lacked that ability did not survive.
Right. And so with the evolutionary theory, we have the two pieces of the fact that many emotions are somewhat demonstrated consistently across right. cultures, and then we have the natural selection
right.
piece that, you know, if you're able to learn from those emotions and experience those emotions, mm-hmm. then you're more likely to survive.
But and Darwin set the table, because what you just said is, on the one hand, we express emotions, sort of there's this mm-hmm. universal expression of emotions, usually through facial expression,
mm-hmm.
and there's the other is the ability to perceive emotions in others.
Right.
Okay, so there's
right.
this two-part process that he was the first to articulate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, the second theory that we're going to talk about is called the James Lange theory.
Right.
And these are two different people, William James and Carl Lange. They kind of discovered this or talked about this separately, but we put it right. together because they're pretty similar. And this has to do with physiological That's reactions right. to events.
Yeah, because Lange was a physiologist.
Right.
And it's not surprising that they got together and this is a physiologic theory, because he was one of the early physiologists.
Right. So what their theory basically says is that when you experience something, it triggers a physiological response inside your body. And then you assign or respond to that physiological response with an emotion.
That's...
Yeah. So that emotional reaction is dependent upon how you interpret that physiological response
yes.
to the things that's going. So
my response equals this emotion.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. So if you experience something and it makes your heart race and it makes you feel a little shaky and your eyes dilate and all that kind of stuff, you may interpret that feeling
right.
as fear.
That's right. Because the environmental event stimulates a reaction automatically.
A physiological reaction, okay. right.
And then you label that reaction
right.
with this word.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that's... And this is important because...
The next one.
Right.
And it is a little bit of splitting of hair, but
it is.
But
it
we're gonna spend a little bit more time talking about this next one for the next podcast. But the next theory sort of is the reverse of that, right? And that's the Cannon-Bard theory.
Right.
And the Cannon-Bard theory is also sort of physiological, but it sort of disagrees with the James Lange theory.
You have an emotional response, emotional reaction to an environmental event.
Mm-hmm. And the emotion happens first, and then you have the physiological.
That's right.
So something happens, and you say, "Oh, that's scary," and that triggers the physiological response.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So it's a chicken or egg
it
type
is
of thing.
Splitting a hair, right?
Yeah.
To me, it always has been. And when we studied this in school, I always had to be very careful and think through it very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
They are very close, but there's the essential difference is. Where's the interpretation?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's about interpretation.
Right. And it's so difficult because we can't, like when we think about attention, we can look at brain waves and we can say, oh, at the P300, at the 300 millisecond mark, that's when your brain registers that something happens.
Right.
We can't do that with emotion.
But even with 300 milliseconds, it's somewhere between
yeah,
100,
that's
no,
right.
somewhere between 100 and 400 or 500, you know. So you're right. You know,
yeah.
When does it occur?
Right.
But this is an important, this becomes an important issue. This,
right.
this whole business about interpreting becomes a very important issue later
right.
on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when it comes to treatment and, right. and things like that.
That's right.
You know, do you experience the physiological response and then label that physiological mm-hmm. response with an emotion?
Right.
Or do you experience an emotion that triggers the physiological response?
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. that difference is pretty critical.
Then it becomes critical.
Right.
Right.
Right. At the intervention level. Right. And we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about that right. in the next podcast. So we're going to kind of get through those two mm-hmm. pretty quickly. Now, the next theory is the... Schachter-Singer.
This was a new one. We did a Schachter also talked about memory.
Right.
The big memory theorist. But so this was a new one. This is something we have to add to our teaching.
Right. Because this one is a cognitive theory.
Right.
And it basically builds on some of the physiological theories, but it's mm-hmm. you know, it's the idea of thinking about what this means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. so you experience something and then you spend time or you take the opportunity to think about what that feeling means.
That's right. Again, we begin with a physiological reaction mm-hmm. to the event, but now they're saying we run this through some complicated cognitive calculus mm-hmm. and we interpret what that means and what our feeling is about.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how this is different is that what the James Lange theory believed is that it was an automatic thing. James Lange and even to some extent Cannon Bard, they believed that these were sort of automatic processes, that
right.
this connection automatically happens. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think that's scary, that physiological response is automatic.
Right.
Or when you experience that physiological event, mm-hmm. that emotion is automatically assigned. Mm-hmm. There's no real cognitive decision making that takes place.
Right.
This theory, the Schachter-Singer theory, suggests that there is some processing that happens.
Right, right. That's right. That you're running this through this cognitive system.
Right.
And you are... So the emphasis is on interpretation
right.
rather than reaction.
And as you can tell, this theory would be very consistent with like a cognitive behavioral type of approach right. where you say, okay, well, all we have to do is change the way that you're thinking about
Since
it.
Since you're thinking about it this right. way, let's change how you're thinking.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it lends very well to a cognitive behavioral types of model of emotion.
Oh. Okay, I'll say it. We've said earlier that in many other podcasts that cognitive behavioral
right.
therapy doesn't always work. And
right.
so... Because it's based on this premise
right.
that this happens.
Right.
If that premise is not correct
right.
or if it's not correct in this particular person or this particular situation, then changing your thinking isn't
right.
going to change your behavior.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So now the fifth
right.
this model
is sort of, yeah.
It's another...
It's an extension.
Yeah, extension
right.
of that. It's called the cognitive appraisal theory.
Right.
And basically what this says is that there is nothing... Nothing happens until you think about it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So there's not, it's sort of like, there's not even a physiological response. There's nothing that happens until you think about it first.
Right.
So sort of like the, again, James Lange and Cannon Bard is sort of the mirror of each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This one is the mirror of the other one, that nothing happens until you right. think about it. Mm-hmm. You experience something, you see something, there's some stimulus that you
right.
are confronted with, and you have to think, that's what this is. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's going to make me nervous. And so
right.
that increases your, or creates the physiological response, mm-hmm. which then creates the emotional
right.
response.
Right.
So,
and so you can see this movement, this intellectual movement from Darwin and James Lange, which was this physiologic response,
right.
this universal physiologic response,
mm-hmm.
to now, wait a minute, we're really thinking about this and naming it.
Right.
They're either occurring simultaneously or... You have to think about it in order to label it.
And it's so funny, Richard, because when we're thinking about this, when you and I are just talking about it,
right.
we talk about it and, you know, we just kind of mm-hmm. move through it. Trying to think about how to talk about this for the podcast,
mm-hmm.
it makes me think about it very differently, because as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking we could spend a lot of time talking about this, because what these models have done over time,
mm-hmm.
we have attempted with each of these successive theories mm-hmm. to try to move into a direction of more and more control.
Right.
That we have more and more control over our emotions and our reactions to things in our environment.
Darwin had no such complication.
Right. It was all physiological. It was all survival.
Right.
And here we've moved from its survival to, you know what? Your body doesn't even respond to anything until you think about it first.
Right. That's right.
Now, I often have issues with those types of theories because I know that my body responds to things before I even know that I'm experiencing something. You know, if you think about this. If you go out to your car and you go to open the handle and you put your hand under the handle and you feel something there,
that moves.
You're going to respond before you even think about what it is.
Right.
Because it's going to trigger what we know is a physiological response in your brain. Mm-hmm. Your thalamus is going to say, "Whoa, watch out!"
Whoa.
So that happens before it even gets to the cortex.
That's
we know that happens.
Right, and that's why I struggle some with these cognitive theories.
Right.
Now, labeling it accurately.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
But to say I'm feeling we react at a subcortical level.
Right.
We're not thinking about it. We simply react.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now the last theory before we take up
But there's going to be a huge but we're going to attach to that later.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
So bear with us.
The way you said that was funny.
But
we're going to put a huge butt on it.
B-U-T, one T on
just
butt.
One T. Mm-hmm. The last theory is the facial feedback theory.
That's right.
So this is shifted. Again, we've gone from evolutionary to cognitive, or to evolutionary to physiological to cognitive, and now this is more social. This is sort of a social theory that...
Social evolutionary,
right. Mm-hmm. It kind of going back around.
Yeah.
Because this is saying that we're judging our emotions. Our emotions are derived from, sometimes from the emotions of others, but how we're...
Right. We judge the emotional state of others by their facial expression.
Right.
Okay. And it's true that most of us, when we're happy, we smile.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also true... And this has happened to everybody. It's also true that facial expressions don't always mirror the emotion that we're experiencing.
Right.
And all of us have had the experience of somebody come up to me and say, "Oh, you look terrible. What's wrong?" And say, "Nothing." What they were doing is they were looking at our face, and our facial expression said something that we weren't feeling.
Right.
I've watched these videos occasionally that we make.
Yeah.
And I look... My facial expression doesn't mirror what I'm feeling.
Right.
I'm really enthusiastic right now, but I look half asleep.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
My son wrote that to me. He said, "You look like the sleepy old guy." And I won't tell you what he said about you. He said, "You look like..." And I'm not. I'm completely normal. I've been up for hours. I've had 3.5 quarts of coffee. And I'm... But it doesn't look like that.
Right.
And so that's what these theorists are saying, is that it's not always an accurate expression.
Right.
And that you can have multiple expressions for the same feeling.
Right.
And that's an important issue as well.
And this again gets back to what we were talking about with autism. This is something that autistic children and adults have a really difficult time with, is reading the emotions, correctly reading the emotions of other people. Mm-hmm. They just really fall short there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's the facial feedback theory of emotion.
Right.
So here we've come almost full circle, where we've come back to sort of an evolutionary perspective of emotion.
I have to say one more thing.
Sure.
About facial feedback.
Uh-huh.
In this day of Facebook,
mm-hmm.
of taking selfies
mm-hmm.
and of posing for pictures,
uh-huh.
facial expression, emotional expression is directly tied to our facial muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just, when you're taking your Facebook pictures,
mm-hmm.
if you just smile, you're not going to look happy. It's going to look artificial.
Mm-hmm.
True happiness comes from your eye muscles,
mm-hmm.
and that's why when we teach acting,
mm-hmm.
why are you looking at me? You look like you're ready to say you're full of crap.
I'm not. I'm just listening.
You're
just
not listening. I know you're listening.
No.
Your eyes are rolling.
No.
When you teach acting, you have to have a happy thought to right. produce true happiness, because mm-hmm. that's what activates your eye muscles.
Right.
And that's where happiness is true. You're still looking at me.
I'm just... I won't look at you. I'll look at you through the camera.
I'll save these pearls of wisdom for others.
No. You are right. There's... true emotion is a gestalt of everything, mm-hmm. of the different facial features. It's not just a smile. It's
that's
a,
right.
You smile with your eyes. You smile with right. the rest of your body as well. So.
That's right. And you have to activate those eye muscles.
Right.
And that's what actors are able to do.
Right.
And that's why when we have to smile in here in the morning. Remember Peter Pan? You got to think a happy thought in order to
right.
fly. You got to think a happy thought in order to activate those eye muscles too. Not just for flight.
So you have to have strong eye muscles to be able to fly. Is that?
I knew. Never. Okay. No, I'm going to continue trying. However, I remain undeterred.
You're doing a great job. So, all right. Well, that's it for today. This was a longer morning podcast than typical, but tomorrow we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about a couple of these theories because they're really important, we think. So, all right. You okay with that?
Yeah, of course.
You're smiling with your eyes. That's great.
Smiling with my eyes. I'm having a happy thought. I might fly away.
You're going to hit me after we
just
done
go.
So.
Okay.
All right. So until next time.
Thank you guys for listening. Uh-huh. Even though he doesn't, I appreciate that you do.
Until next time. Stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.